I wonder, have you ever gone back to the books you loved as a child and read them as an adult? I've tried reading my Enid Blyton and Faraway Tree books to my children. I've got one here, actually. But we just don't get past the first few pages. But I'm hoping we'll have more success with Roald Dahl's Matilda, although that's a few years in the future. But if you have revisited old favourites, what did you find? Did they hold that same magic for you as they did all those years ago? Well, Jane Sullivan has been doing just this. She's been rereading the books she adored as a child to try to recapture the magic, but also to capture who she was as that young reader. Jane is a novelist and literary journalist. In fact, I read Jane's literary columns each weekend in The Age. Her book about rereading is called Storytime, and Jane is in the studio with me. Hi, Jane.
Hello, Sarah.
Now, Jane, as it's book week, I need to know, what character would you dress up as?
Oh, what a question.
You've caught me on the spot now.
Well, I've got a ready answer for you. I would dress up as Alice from the Alice in Wonderland
books. I knew you would
say
that.
Because I actually did this when I was a kid. We didn't have anything like book week then, but we did have fancy dress days at school fetes at primary school. And I do remember going one year as Alice, which was very easy. I just had to wear a slightly frilly dress and an apron and wear my hair long with an Alice band. And there I was. I was instant Alice. And I made me feel really confident, this costume. I really entered into the character of Alice, as indeed I did when I went back and read the books.
In fact, you reread Alice in Wonderland for this rereading project. What made you want to reread your books of childhood?
Well, this goes back quite a few years. Well, I suppose literally all my life, because I've spent all my time really professionally reading and in the last 10, 20 years or so doing a lot of writing about reading and about books as a journalist and also writing my own books. I've written two novels. And thinking about all this, I thought, well, what is it that's made me such a keen reader? And why is it that somehow in all these years of reading, I have never quite discovered the first thrill and rapture that I had when reading books as a child?
Really? In all of that reading you've done, you haven't discovered that thrill?
No, and this includes wonderful books, you know, Tolstoy and Dickens and Jane Austen and brilliant books. But somehow they haven't done the same thing to me as Enid Blyton, of all people, did.
But why do you think that is? What is so special about our reading as children as compared to when we're reading as adults?
Well, I think there's a number of things. For one thing, we come to reading as a kind of blank slate. We don't know that much about the world, and we're still discovering a lot of things about the world and about our family and about ourselves. And I think books really are a tremendous novelty when you're young. From the moment you can look at pictures and when you actually learn to read, I think that's a great thrill when you finally master the words on the page. And so it's all new and it's all exciting. And you're going out into worlds, which I think children want to do. They want to go out into different worlds and they want to have adventures that they won't get in their normal lives. And that, I think, is a huge attraction when you're reading.
And I think for children, their worlds are permeable, aren't they, between the real and the unreal?
Very much, yes. We go back and forth. And one of the things I discovered when I was going back to reread the books I read when I was young was that the emotions I felt were so strong, and I was getting a little bit of an echo that the thrills and the horror, that there is real fear involved in some of these books, but I was kind of addicted to the fear as much as I was addicted to the fun.
Well, and you don't just reread these books, Jane. You have an almost scientific approach to the project. What did you set out to do?
Well, I thought I'd better have a bit of method to this, not just sort of wallow around and get emotional. So what I did was I had a process where I picked about 12 or 15 books, and I'd read all of them between the ages of 7 and 11, which I think are the really formative years. So first of all, I wrote down what I could remember about these books, taking each one in turn. And then I went back and I actually reread them and I made notes about what the differences were between what I remembered and what was actually in the book, and also what my feelings were first as a child and whether they changed as an adult and my reactions. And then I did a bit of outside research. I found out things about the author and the way the book had been received and so on. And then As I went along, I tried to come up with hypotheses to explain what it was about these books that was so special to me, why I needed these books. And what I found was, as I approached each book, I come up with a nice, great hypothesis that seemed to work perfectly. And then I get to the next book and I'd have to ditch my hypothesis because it would be completely wrong. So all the time I was having a voyage of discovery on several levels as I wrote the book.
So perhaps you can't apply scientific method to childhood memories.
Probably not, but I had a go.
It's a good try.
It gave me a structure for the book anyway.
So some of the books I knew and some I didn't. Of course, I knew Narnia and Winnie the Pooh, Wind in the Willows. But there were others I didn't. The Enchanted Castle by E. Nesbitt. What were some of the others?
The Enchanted Castle by E. Nesbitt, who was quite well known when I was a child, but perhaps not so well known now, which I think is a pity. There were some that are really obscure that probably nobody's ever heard of except me in Australia. There was a book called The Warden's Niece by Gillian Avery. I think Gillian Avery, who died recently, I think she should be reinstated as one of the great writers of children's books. I think I made a real discovery going back and reading this book again, and I would love her books to be resurrected. I have a chapter on Australian books, and they're all pretty well known to Australian readers.
The Magic Pudding
being the main one. Mm-hmm. And then there's a wonderful book by Alan Garner called The Weird Stone of Brisingamen, which I think is a brilliant fantasy book. And I would like this one to be rediscovered. Alan Garner is very well known in the UK, but he's not so well known here. And there's also a fantastic book called Great Tales of Terror in the Supernatural, which was first published in the 1940s.
That sounds perfect for children.
Yeah, it was actually a book for adults, but I stole it from my parents' library and I hid it under the bed and I used to dip into it. It became a sort of compulsion. I've said it was like my pornography. And that's what it felt like, because it was very exciting and very thrilling. But I also had the feeling this was forbidden. And I was also so scared I could hardly bring myself to read it, but I couldn't put it down.
Well, Jane Sullivan, you did grow up in England and you came to Australia in your 30s, I think. I'd like to talk about Enid Blyton. I related to, with the stories in your book Storytime, I did relate more to the ones that I had already read.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed the trip down memory lane that it took me on. I've certainly read a few of Enid Blyton's 700 books. Can you believe
it? It's amazing,
and
isn't it?
And as I said, I brought along my Faraway Tree book, the deluxe edition by Georgina Hargreaves. She knocked off a book in a week.
Yes, she was incredible. She was so prolific. She would just sit down and it would all pour out on her typewriter. And I thought, oh, maybe she planned it all in advance. No, she didn't. She just sat down and the ideas came to her and she wrote them down. And she never revised. She never went back to rewrite anything. She just produced a book and that was it. And out it went into the world. She was a kind of book machine, really. Just churn them out.
And at her height, she was churning out 50 books a year.
Yeah.
It's really hard to imagine, isn't it?
It is extraordinary. I don't think any writer could do that now. Nor should they, actually.
Yes. Well, as you discovered, there's problems in revisiting her work.
Yes, that's to put it mildly. I was so looking forward. I picked a book called The Castle of Adventure, which I absolutely loved, the whole adventure series. And I was absolutely addicted to Enid Blyton as a child. I couldn't wait to read the next book once I'd finished one. So I thought, oh, this is going to be such fun. So back I went and I started reading The Castle of Adventure. And from the first page, I realised this devastating fact that she is an absolutely terrible writer. And the little critic voice in my head that you get as you become an adult, you don't have it as a child, but you certainly get it as you grow older. The little critic voice was shrieking at me all the time, look at this rubbish. This is a terrible sentence construction. This is a horrible, pathetic, bland character. This is a scenery which is not properly described. This is contradicting something which was said a few pages ago. This is repeating something which was said a few pages ago. And I found it very difficult to shut this voice up. And it was a real effort to get through the book, I have to say. It was quite a long book and I just wanted, it read actually like a parody of Enid Blyton rather than the real thing.
And yet Enid Blyton is one of the best-selling writers of all time.
Absolutely.
So how do you understand this when the writing isn't particularly great?
Well, this was a real challenge to me. I had to try and work out what it was about this book that I so loved as a child. And obviously it wasn't the things that I tend to love about writing as an adult. It was something quite different. So I thought about it and And I decided in the end that there was about four things that were working. One was it was this idea of adventure, that you could go into a world that was very much an adventurous world, that was very different from my own world as a child, which was quite, you know, boring. But on the other hand, I didn't want to have a proper adventure. That would be too frightening. So the books provided a safe way for me to explore this business of going out and meeting the villains head on and foiling them. You always foil villains and you always come up trumps in the end. You go out with your friends and your family and your brothers and sisters, and you're all on your own. There's no parents there. And you explore the countryside and you have wonderful food, which you bring with you. It's all very yummy. You usually have animals in the story there somewhere too. Animals are very important in Enid Blyton's books. There's a lot of fun and humour. And in the end, the good guys win. And there's something about
that. So that's a recipe for success.
Yes, and I think she just knew it intuitively how to do it, instinctively how to provide that world that children so love.
Now, Jane, you actually looked at the backgrounds of many of the authors that you write about. And what's really interesting is that a lot of the authors seem to be recluses or have difficult relationships with their children, like Enid Blyton. So Kenneth Graham, Lewis Carroll, A.A. Milne. They all had difficulties in relationships and yet were able to create these wonderful worlds that children could readily enter. There seems to be such a disjunction there.
Well, it's right. At first, it does seem like a contradiction. But when I thought about it, I think, in fact, one of the reasons these people became writers for children was that they could access this ideal world of the child that they couldn't access through their own parenting, because frequently they were what we would call bad parents. I mean, even allowing for the middle class rules of the time, where parents didn't tend to see their kids much, so the kids were with nannies or at boarding school or whatever. Even so, they were very I think A.A. Milne was a quite tragic case. He would sit at one end of the table and smoke his pipe, and his son Christopher Robin, who of course was the hero of his books, would sit at the other end of the table doing a little drawing, and they didn't talk to each other at all. And I thought that was so very sad.
Yeah, and on the way to the boarding house, they'd say goodbye half an hour before they reached the boarding house, and then they didn't have to talk for the rest of the journey.
They'd just sit in the car and not look at each other. It was terribly sad, yeah. Yeah. But I think the reason they do become, these writers do become writers for children, is they can access this magical world that maybe they never had as children, and certainly they don't have with their own children.
Jane, this journey that you've been on is obviously powered by nostalgia.
Yes.
Would you recommend we all go back to our childhood favourites?
I would, definitely, because in the first place, you will feel a lovely warm glow of nostalgia, and that's fun and that's nice. But I think it goes further than that. I found when I went back and read these books that I discovered all sorts of things. And the most surprising things were the things I discovered about myself, both as a child and as an adult. It was quite a revelation to me. I'd always thought of myself as a very shy, timid, introverted child. I knew that I had terrible trouble making friends when I was first going to school. It was very difficult for me. But I managed somehow to get through that. And when I went back, I discovered that I was actually a lot more resourceful and inventive and brave than I thought I was, just through the business of reading these books.
Well, it was a worthwhile journey then. Thank you so much for taking me on this journey, Jane. I really did enjoy it.
Thank you, Sarah. I enjoyed it too.
Jane Sullivan is an author and literary journalist. Her book is called Storytime, and it's published by Ventura.